And we'll move to our third case this morning, Ivan Caravedo versus Lynch.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Timothy Gamacorda on behalf of the petitioner. The premise or posture of this case is fairly simple. It has to do with a request for a continuance at a master calendar hearing before an immigration judge. The premise of the request for a continuance was to allow the petitioner an opportunity to proceed a collateral fight, if you will, with USCIS because of a 204C marriage fraud. The case law is clear that collateral matters, the immigration judge does not have to continue the case. However, the case here is a little bit different. And in my opening brief, I argued why good cause did exist for a request for a continuance. And that is because this petitioner here, in the past, was represented by counsel at the USCIS level, and his attorney never appealed that 204C finding. That attorney has been disbarred because of marriage fraud conspiracy charges.
Forgive me for interrupting, but was his former counsel's conviction for conspiracy to commit marriage fraud related to Cadavido's marriage?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. And even though the petitioner has averred that he never paid $7,000 for any kind of marriage, even the immigration judge said, well, it's very hard to go after previous counsel because he has been disbarred. So a Lozada motion most likely would not work.
I don't understand that point. Why wouldn't a Lozada motion, a Lozada procedural requirements be appropriate to at least hear what counsel has to say?
I was told that, well, you have to make a bar complaint.
Yeah.
And he has to respond. And I was assuming because he's already been disbarred.
If I could get back to the focus, which is this continuance that was denied.
Right.
You sought that on the day of the hearing for the first time, correct?
As newly retained counsel,
well,
yes.
you first filed one back on October 1st, correct?
Correct.
And in effect, it was granted by reason of the government shutdown, right? In
correct.
Fall of 2013.
Right.
So why didn't that give you enough time to get ready?
In terms of, well, I mean, the reason that I filed that continuance is because I was under the impression that we were going to have a contested hearing on the fraud charge. And I wanted to ask the court if I could subpoena witnesses.
Never
received an answer, right. I mean,
the hearing is scheduled, and you show up saying, I need a continuance on the day of the hearing.
Right.
Most trial judges who have busy calendars and are ready to hear your case are going to be skeptical about a day of the hearing motion saying I'm not ready yet, right?
Well, the request for the continuance, I mean, the government eventually dismissed the marriage fraud, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's off the table. I wanted an opportunity to see if the
You want to try a collateral challenge, right?
Well, if they would close the case for a period of time whereby I can go back to USCIS.
Now, let me ask you about that, okay? Because you told us in your brief that the chances of USCIS agreeing to entertain the kind of appeal that you want to say that you say you want to pursue is nil.
That's my...
Given that circumstance, how could it be an abuse of discretion to deny you the opportunity to pursue a hopeless collateral challenge?
Well, I mean, I said it's nil, correct, but at least...
You're probably right. But I...
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I would have tried to build it up and submit all the affidavits under the sun. I mean, even today, we have approved I-130. And so, unfortunately, the client got his I-130 approved, and he didn't tell me, and that's why I couldn't advise the court or the board about that. But I just wanted to point that out. But the reason why that I wanted to ask for the continuance is... The reason for the continuance. I understand the courts are going to say it's speculation, right? It's speculation, right? But if you consider the fact that he had deficient counsel at the USCIS level, I at least wanted to have an opportunity to fight that with USCIS. There was no inconvenience to the court to close the case. I mean, the courts close cases all the time, and I just wanted that opportunity. So
why didn't you pursue that during the time where you had the de facto continuance as a result of the government shutdown?
In terms of what? With USCIS?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you had got this gift as a result of the budget standoff in Washington.
It's only 2 months, correct. Even had I submitted a request to USCIS, the IJ most likely would have entered that departure order because they're two different agencies. It's a collateral attack. But I understand your point.
All right, thank you. Ms. Workman. Mr. Gambacorda, you're over here.
May it please the court, Claire Workman for the Attorney General. The court should deny this petition for review because the agency acted well within its considerable discretion in denying petitioner's request for a continuance. Petitioner has
conceded. You know, one thing I really find so troubling about this case, Ms. Workman, is that despite the fact that the government agency dropped the marriage fraud charge, it continued to rely on it. How could the government say that Gadevedo would not have had any chance to adjust his status in any case because of the sham marriage when that charge had been dropped? I mean, talk about having it both ways. It is just so unjust.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, there's a difference in the burden of proof on a removability charge. Of course, it's the government's burden to prove that charge, and it declined to go forward with that charge because petitioner had already conceded the other two charges. So, but that doesn't mean, with respect to relief, it's of course the alien or the non-citizen's burden to prove eligibility and that he or she merits a favorable exercise of discretion for adjustment of status. And in this case, the petitioner would still need to show he is admissible. That's one of the requirements for adjustment of status. And that requirement is that he must show he's clearly and beyond a doubt entitled to be admitted and not inadmissible under 8 U.S.C. Section 1182, which includes Section 1182A6C1, which is the fraud or misrepresentation ground of inadmissibility. So, and then if...
Look, no matter how you spin it, okay, the fact is that when you fail to show up, the government then used the fact of the marriage fraud to justify the failure to continue the case by stating that he was unlikely to prevail in any case, in any event, because of the marriage fraud. And it seems to me that the government should not have it both ways. Once the government decides to drop the sham marriage charge, it should never be allowed to rely on it again, even in a tangential way. A court should not have heard the words sham marriage again. And this is such a difficult situation because, boy, he may have had the most terrible lawyer that we've seen in a very long time originally, on top of everything else.
Well, Your Honor, there's also a difference between the marriage fraud charge and the finding under 8 U.S.C. Section 1154C that is a bar to any future visa petitions being approved when there's been a finding of marriage fraud. That's something that USCIS found in this case originally. So that was still in play, even though DHS decided not to proceed with the marriage fraud charge of removability. So the immigration judge and then the board used the petitioner's unlikely or perhaps speculative possibility that he would be able to overcome that fraud finding with an untimely challenge before USCIS is only one of the many speculative events that would have to occur for a petitioner to be eligible for adjustment of status, including the fact that he didn't even have, at the time he requested his continuance, he did not have a qualifying relative who could apply for a visa petition on his behalf. He alleged that he had a daughter who was in naturalization proceedings at the time, but he provided no evidence as to where she was in that process. And so, of course, he did not have an approved, let alone a pending I-130 visa petition at that time. And this court repeatedly has found no abuse of discretion where the agency has denied a continuance because there is no prima facie approvable visa petition filed on the non-citizen's behalf. And with respect to the former attorney who handled the adjustment of status application and petitioner's ex-wife's, the first I-130 visa petition that was filed with USCIS. And there is no reason why the petitioner could not have filed a Lozada motion to reopen against that former attorney just because he was disbarred.
Well, that would have been risky since that attorney, as I understand it, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit marriage fraud.
Yes, Your Honor. So there's...
I assume the facts underlying that conviction involved a different alien?
As far as I can understand from the indictment that is in our record and the... there's no mention of this petitioner as part of the conspiracy charges that attorney was convicted under. And, but it of course, does look suspicious And, in fact, this petitioner actually worked for that attorney during that time that he was filing, or actually, excuse me, before he... Okay, he worked for that attorney from January of 2004 to May of 2007. He married his ex-wife in March of 2007, and she filed that I-130 in May of 2007. So the timing is
suspicious.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Workman, let me try to ask this way. Let's go back to October of 2013. Okay. Late October, the government shutdown has ended. It's open for business again. If Mr. Cadavedo had gone back to USCIS in late October of 2013, what procedures were available to him to try to challenge that 2009 finding of fraud?
Well, Your Honor, he could have filed an untimely motion to reopen or reconsider. Okay. And...
based on the Lozado, you'd have to follow that process, blame his lawyer.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. There's no... the regulation is very brief on the motions to reopen and reconsider, on the untimely ones before USCIS, but it
but
certainly...
That's the channel.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. He actually had... by my count, about 6 opportunities to contest the fraud finding, and to the best of my knowledge, has never taken advantage of any of them.
What are the other 5?
So he could have first, of course, filed a timely motion to reopen or reconsider before USCIS within 30 days of the adjustment of status denial. He could have sought APA review in district court. He could have filed the untimely motion, and that regulation, 8 CFR section 103.5A1I, you just have to show that the delay was, and I'm quoting, delay was reasonable and was beyond his or her control. So, of course, ineffective assistance would be a conceivable basis that would fall within that. Another option, and probably the most likelihood, the one that had the best likelihood of succeeding, would have been to file a motion to remand with the board while his appeal was pending. Now, of course, that meant if petitioner did not notify his attorney that second I-130 had been approved, but that falls on him, because that would have, if he had filed that motion to remand, then the board might have remanded to the immigration judge to consider that approved I-130 and how that played into that judge's reasoning on the denial of the continuance. But again, he didn't do that. His options that remain now are a joint motion to reopen with ICE, but of course ICE has to agree to file that, because any motion to reopen now would be untimely. So that a joint motion is not subject to the time requirements. Oh, I'm sorry, my time is up. May I finish?
You can conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. The last option would be a motion for sua sponte reopening, which again has a high hurdle, but it's a possibility. And lastly, your petitioner actually has the ability to consular process with his approved I-130. He does have to go back. He would have to go back to the Philippines, and there are some other hurdles that he would have to face, but that is a possibility that remains to him.
All right. Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gambacorta, how much time did he have left? You have 2 minutes left.
In terms of the remedies available to petitioner, I believe his remedies are pretty much limited. Counselor processing is an option, but don't forget, if we have a departure order against him, that is a bar for 10 years. He would also have to have an unlawful presence waiver as well. That could be done, but the removal order for 10 years is definitely an impediment. In terms of the untimely motion to remand, I'm sorry, the motion to remand to the board, that would have been the ideal situation. Unfortunately, in September 2015, Mr. Cadavedo had come to my office, and that's when he had showed me the approved I-130 and naturalization. And so that's why that was not done at that time. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.